Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode. Thanks for coming to Rising Leaders Talk Trash. We're so excited to bring you this session because on the stage, we have four remarkable 40 under 40 winners, and they each have a different perspective to bring you today. So you'll learn a lot and you'll be inspired for sure when you leave. A few housekeeping items before we get started. We do have a survey in Slido this year. If you go to slido.com and put in code WEF4, you could be entered to win a $50 gift card. And at the end, we'll have plenty of time for Q&A, so please think about what you want to ask these young professionals, and they will be happy to answer. And I know that's always such a good part of this, so please think about that. And other than that, I think we'll get going. You ready?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Okay. So we will start. On the stage, we have Georgia Sherwin from Closed Loop Partners. We have Willie Good at the end. And we have Terrell Hagler, your fave trash man. If you don't follow him on Instagram, you should. And then we have Ryan Melsert, and he's with the American Battery Technology Company. So as you can tell with their backgrounds, we have haulers, we have circular, we have technology. You're in for a treat. So I'm gonna start with Will. So Will, I mean, what do your family has had, right? Your dad won Hall of Fame. Yep. He's been inducted to the NWRA Hall of Fame, and yep. Here you are, 40 under 40 winner. Yes, so congratulations to both of you.
Thank you very much.
So with that being said, talk to me a little bit about legacy and the importance of legacy in this industry, and particularly in your accomplished family.
Yes, ma'am. So good afternoon, everyone. So speaking on legacy, as Liz kind of foreshadowed, my dad, he's here in the audience today. He's a esteemed guy in the industry. He won the he's a inductee of the Hall of Fame this year, so we're very excited and proud of him for that. And our industry is a tough industry to get into, right? Even tougher to stay in. So, being though we have that guy or that woman that can kind of steer you in the right direction and tell you the do's and the don'ts of our industry, it kind of helps you with those pitfalls that some people may fall into, you know? And it's just exciting. It's exciting to see his success and be able to mimic it and try to live up and fill those shoes. So it's very exciting. So legacy with us, you know, we just want to, his dream as always has been to keep our company going for 100 plus years, right? Love so it. When he told me that dream, it just came to me like, okay, I got a lot of things to buckle down and make sure I'm doing the right things, right? And make sure that I'm doing the right thing to keep us in the right ship, and also for him to be able to trust me with right. certain things, because you know in our industry it's a lot of money and a lot of things that you have to watch out for in our industry. So in our industry, like I said, it's a tough thing to get into. So when you have that patriarch in your family that's kind of helping you with that, and he's learning and I'm learning at the same time, it's exciting and it's. It's exciting and it helps with our vendors. It helps with our competitors to be in those certain rooms and be able to rub those shoulders and they to look at you like, hey, you know, your dad did it. What you gonna do? Right. You know, what can you do? And it's a blessing. It's exciting, you know. So I'm the oldest of five. So you know, I just want to make sure I'm that good example for them to say, okay, if you buckle down. You do what you have to do. You can also keep that dream alive. And it's very important to us, being from our background, from our father's background, you know, it's a blessing to be able to sit on the stage with these esteemed people, to be able to talk to you, to talk to you guys, and to be able to share some of the things that we know and what we experience and how we go about our business. So in our industry, it's a lot about relationships, mm-hmm. right? You know, you have to be able to be that person. I like to say in our industry, it's not a salt of the earth people, okay. right? You could go in a room with competitors and they'll share with you those things that those pitfalls and things of that nature. So it's exciting. So to be able to keep that legacy alive, again, it's a blessing. It's an honor. And I'm excited to be able to be that second generation guy to kind of keep it going. Yeah.
Well, you're doing it already, so
appreciate it.
And we'll dig in more about the business in a bit.
Of course.
But for you, Georgia, I know that you're part of a circular economy investment firm. So I'd love to know a little bit more about some of the innovations that you're most excited about in this space and details on why you're excited about them.
Sure. Hello, everyone. It's great to be here. I feel equally privileged to be on stage with everyone here. I think so. Closeup Partners, we're an investment firm and an innovation center focused on circular economy solutions. We invest across multiple sectors, so plastics and packaging, food and agriculture, fashion and apparel, as well as supply chain technology innovations. And so in each of those categories, there's so many innovations that are exciting. It gives me a lot of optimism about our future. But I'll kind of pick a couple. I think one in the food and agriculture space is a company called Home Biogas, where they create anaerobic household digesters that transform organic waste, so your food waste, yard scraps, and convert it into clean energy as well as fertilizer. And they're doing amazing work across the global south, as well as they've recently expanded into North America. I think in the fashion and apparel space, which is very interesting, given it's a very heavy carbon footprint to date, extremely heavy, there's a lot of innovation happening there, but we invested in a company called Thrilling that is taking secondhand vintage stores and thrift stores across the US, so independent stores, and creating a online e-commerce platform for those. And so it A, shows momentum around the resale secondhand space, which inevitably is better for the environment. You're making more use of those materials that and products that have been made, but also it creates a new sales channel and a broader platform for these independent thrift stores. So love Thrilling, amazing company. And I'm trying to think, El Gramo is another one in the plastics and packaging space. So looking at reusable packaging. And so when we're thinking about single-use plastic ending up in our oceans and waterways, you know, reusable systems are part of the solution suite to address challenges such as that. And so they're a company that came out of Chile, and they ultimately have this reusable packaging system that's actually smart. So you can kind of, your packaging almost becomes like a wallet, and you can then discount reuses and incentivize reuse through the kind of gamification. And so they're another amazing company that I'm excited about.
It's so nice because you get to dabble in all of them in a big way. So good for you. And Terrell, welcome. So glad you're here. It's actually Georgia and Terrell's first time in Vegas. So we're glad they made it and they weren't sidetracked by anything else today. So Terrell, you launched an Instagram that went viral. Can you give the audience a little bit of background about why you did it and sort of what you've accomplished since then?
Sure. Hi, everybody. Oh, I guess lunch hit y'all hard, huh? It's okay. So again, my name's Terrell. On Instagram, I'm known as Your Fave Trash Man. And so I became a sanitation worker December 30th, 2019. By March 2020, I was deemed an essential worker. And in Philadelphia, it was really bad. We had over 400 sanitation workers catch COVID, quarantine. We were behind about 4 days in trash collection. So there were images in Philadelphia where you get to the top of the block, you couldn't even see the houses. All you saw was bags of trash. Coupled with the incompetence of our streets commissioner not doing anything about it, not giving us PPE, cleaning supplies. People say that I speak my mind. I'm a September Virgo. So, see, she gets it. So I created an Instagram to shed a light and to give people an inside look on what it was like to be a sanitation worker in Philadelphia during the pandemic. My first post was June 17th, 2020. By September 2020, I found myself on the Kelly Clarkson show. October, I found myself on Worldwide News with David Muir. December, I found myself doing a commercial for the Biden administration. By January, I had been asked by 4 council people to quit and join their campaign and run community outreach for the council people. So As of today, I'm sitting at over 30,000 followers on Instagram, and I like to use my platform to advocate for the sanitation industry. So I'm always talking about hazardous pay for sanitation workers. I'm always talking about pushing technology to keep them safe. But I'm also always talking about educating our children. I work a lot with professors at UPenn, and they've discovered that littering is a taught behavior. So I took my initiative and I actually wrote a children's book around environmental justice to teach children that sanitation workers are cool and littering is bad. But the thing I'm really proud about is that I've organized over 80 community cleanups in Philadelphia, and I've picked up over 300 tons of trash in the city. So I'm just excited to be here. You're not going to get any science from me, like, you know, batteries and and circular and, you know, years of hauling. My brand is not even 2 years old yet. I like to tell people I'm still a baby in the industry. I just have a really loud cry. But yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, and I just want to use Instagram to shed a light. And I didn't know there was such a need for that communication between residents, municipals, and, you know, sanitation. I just stumbled upon it on this past Earth Day. I found myself co-hosting on the Today Show for their Earth Day event. And I'm just like, all I do is pick up trash. So thank you.
Oh, that's great, Joel. You've made a big impact in 2 years, so thank you.
Thank you.
And then Ryan is our innovator of the year. So we have 40 under 40s, and actually Terrell is a change maker. I should have said that, because he's created so much change in such a short period of time. And Ryan is an innovator. The work he's doing is so important, especially where we are in the world, and he's won awards for it, he's won patents. So Ryan, I know that you've actually created a closed loop system, and you're handling materials that are often considered difficult. So can you talk a little bit about how you've created a system and how that compares to existing legacy systems and why yours is different?
Yes, of course. So thank you for having us here. In general, much of my background is in, you know, new ways to manufacture minerals and battery metals. I've been working in that space close to 20 years. Back in end of 2014, early 2015, you know, I was one of the initial team that helped design, you know, the Tesla battery gigafactory up in Northern Nevada. So early on, we were doing, you know, every aspect of designing the physical facility, the cell manufacturing equipments and layouts, the utility systems, really helping to ramp up each of those manufacturing lines. And a lot of people look at the output of that facility and they see individual battery cells, they see large vehicle packs, but along every single stage of manufacturing, there are different types of wastes and defects that are made. There are individual powders, there are slurries, there are coat electrodes, there are metal scraps, there are cells and modules and packs. And especially in those days, they were of a very new chemistry, a new form factor. And whenever we would have a waste product, it was very difficult to find anybody who would actually accept it or be able to recycle it in an environmentally sustainable manner or in an economically sustainable manner. So unfortunately, in the early days, we just had large amounts of waste piling up on site. You know, you can see the overhead shots of hundreds of tractor trailers just parked on the site, filled with waste material that we couldn't get anybody to take away. So my team and I had spent years really designing the manufacturing aspects of how you go from those very raw battery metals to the refined metals, to active products, to cells, the modules, the packs. And we realized, you know, we had the skill set that was needed to design essentially a reverse process. Instead of just taking batteries and mixing them in with other types of metal waste and burning them or grinding them up in large mixed processes, we instead developed a process that can reverse manufacture these electric vehicle batteries, these large grid stationary storage batteries, even consumer electronics-based batteries. So now in a much more strategic fashion, we can mechanically disassemble modules to cells, cells down to subcell components, and then sort each of those components. We can then extract each individual metal one at a time, and then purify them all the way up to the same specifications that are needed when sourcing raw metals. And we sell them right back into the same customers domestically, as the conventional mining industry. So we're really taking the manufacturing aspect of what we did for years, designing a reverse process, and now we're building, you know, one of the largest battery recycling facilities in the world, just up in Northern Nevada outside of Reno. So towards the end of this year, as we're commissioning and ramping that plant, we'll really be implementing a lot of the circularity that has been talked about for the past few years.
Amazing. And boy, do we need it. So thanks, Ryan. And Will, back to you. So I don't want to keep focusing on the family legacy, but you're such a different generation than your dad. So talk about what you've kind of done to keep it fresh, how to go over with dad, and what else do you see as potential as a second generation owner of the company?
Yeah, so to keep it fresh, we just try to implement new technologies, obviously, into our business. And that new generation of, you have your old school truck drivers and you have these new style trucks coming out, right? You have these ASLs, it kind of takes away those helpers on the back of the truck, right? So just trying to keep up with that. And then, you know, making sure that we are being able to communicate right with those new drivers and those new helpers that are coming on board, because they have a different way of thinking. They have a different way of wanting to do things. So being able to communicate with them. Again, just making sure that we're not using all the old ways of business to try to pick up the trash in our new state of where we are now. So with that, it's just using those platforms, those new technology systems, making sure that we're using them effectively and efficiently. Of course, going back and forth with Pops, just making sure we want to spend that money to use, you know, saying, because he'll go do his back of the paper and scratch his scratch, right? But we want to put it in the system, make the system work for us, you know, so we can cut down some of those times of actually getting that information out, you know, because we want to be able to know what we're doing out on the streets. We want to be able to see it in real time and not be able to see it in that lag time. So just using technology as it develops is one thing that we want to use now. And then, like I said, communicating with our new generation of drivers, our new generation of labor techs, making sure we're communicating, I don't want to say on their level, but making sure we're communicating in their language, right? Making sure that we are hearing their concerns, making sure that it's lining up with what we need to get done to make sure that we're doing what we need to do and do it efficiently, safely, and correctly. You know, we're very open to, where we're a family business. So we want to hear our people talk to us. What do you see out there? What can we do better? How can we make your job easier? You know, it comes back to with not just our industry and the trash industry and any industry with, you know, that involves the trash, but communication is a big thing. Communication and understanding and knowing that one way of doing things is not the only way of doing things, you know? So we just want to make sure that we're talking to our guys, our ladies, and making sure that we're implemented in a right and efficient way. So I think the main thing is just communication, understanding what new technology is coming out, making sure that we're using them correctly, and you know, just making sure we're doing the right things for us, but also for the people that work with us and for us.
That's great. Yeah. It sounds like you really put them first.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Oh, of course. You know, they're the front line. They're the people that the residents see. They're the people that the commercial customers see. But they're not going to always see myself, right? Always see people in the office. They're not going to see us. They're going to see the people that's actually servicing their containers. So we want to make sure that we're listening to what they have to say. You know, and it makes things so much easier. You know, so we do a thing where we have our tailgate meetings. So every Tuesday we have a tailgate meeting. So we'll have all our drivers and our helpers come. We'll have our list of items that we want to discuss. And after we discuss our items, we'll have questions. What questions do you guys have? What do you see on the street? You know, what can we do to make your job easier? It all goes back to communication. And because we communicate with them, that it's more trust that they have in us. And they'll go out and perform their jobs 10 times better.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's great. And then Georgia, wondering on your end, do you have any advice for startups? And if they want to attract capital, do you have any advice you could share?
Sure. And actually, I'll build on, because I think communication is one of the key things. And in this case, for startups to really communicate their impact story effectively and to be able to back that up with verifiable data. I think what we see is there is increasing numbers of circular economy business models, more and more innovators. Since I joined Closed Loop Partners 3.5 years ago, it's just been more and more every year. And so to be able to communicate effectively that impact story helps investors differentiate between those who are authentic and those who potentially could be greenwashing, for example. So I think communication is really key. I think obviously in an investment context, being able to show market demand and market signal is going to be really important. And so the more that startups and companies can show, you know, a letter of intent from a client, or show pilots, or contracts in place, that's really going to help signal to investors that there is that demand out there. And then lastly, always the team, just a great team, especially if you're at a venture capital stage, there could be two to three, your team is 1 to 2 to 3 people, and so making sure that you have a phenomenal, engaged and enthusiastic team is critical.
And Terrell, to continue on the communication theme, I mean, that's why you're here today. You communicated effectively. What are you most proud of? Because I know that you've done a lot of advocacy work in the past couple of years, and you've accomplished a lot. What are you most proud of?
Oh, that's a loaded question. I think the thing I'm most proud about, and I can only speak, what I see, is that there's been a shift in Philadelphia around environmental justice.
Okay.
There's been a shift around how we treat sanitation workers. But then the main thing is there's been a shift in children. So I know, the name of my book is called I'm Cool Too, because my children were lying to their friends, telling them that I was a cop because they didn't want them to know I was a sanitation worker. Like, they just thought it was so uncool to be a sanitation worker. I couldn't pick them up in front of the school. I had to park around the corner. And I'm like, wait, this is too much. Like, but now that they understand what sanitation workers do for community, how important they are, and why we have to stop littering, my 10-year-old went to her school and started a recycling program. So it's those things that, if my daughter can do it at her school, then his daughter could do it, and then her daughter, and then his son, and then so then we could start a wildfire of children that are ignited with positive relationships to trash. There's a negative association to trash all the time. That's because that's how we look at it. But if you can ignite a positive relationship early enough, instead of people like, oh, trash is nasty, it's like, oh, let's pick it up, shifting that mindset. So I think that's what I'm most proud about, is that shift in behavior and mindset.
Oh, that's great. And then we'll continue to grow. So
hopefully.
The place to go. And then Ryan, I know the government has made some announcements recently about doing more with battery manufacturing, recycling. Tell us more about that, how it will impact you, where you are, and what you see down the road.
They have, yes, and it's actually one of the rare areas where, both major political parties really agree, is the fact that even if we build large amounts of electric vehicle factories in this country, we build large amounts of battery cell manufacturing facilities. Right now, the metals that feed those batteries, less than 1% of each of those metals are actually manufactured in the US. So it makes those very large facilities dependent on foreign materials. It makes it much more expensive to source those materials, and it makes it a higher environmental footprint to have those metals extracted in foreign countries than have them transported to the US. So back at the end of last summer, in the bipartisan infrastructure bill, large amounts of funding were passed by both parties, specifically towards ramping up primary battery metals manufacturing in the US, and then also specifically for the recycling of lithium-ion batteries. So that passed back in August and September, and then just over the past 2 months, a lot of those dollars have actually made their ways to specific opportunities. So just a week ago today, the Department of Energy announced about $3.1 billion in funding to now start building commercial scale facilities of battery recycling facilities and of these primary battery metals facilities. And Nevada is uniquely positioned to really take advantage of this, since it has a lot of the cell manufacturing capacity already. It has one of the highest resources of lithium within the domestic US. And we have, you know, a battery recycling facility under construction here as well. So it's great to have support from the industry recently, and now also having the federal government really step in and help ramping up the commercialization of these facilities.
And you're right, it's nice to see them agree on something.
Yes, it is.
And Will, talk to us a little bit about the pandemic, because you had growth, and I know that you changed geographies and where you were, and you've really achieved success all during the pandemic, so we'd love to hear more.
Yes, obviously it was during the pandemic, it was new to all of us, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone was just so uninformed of what's going on and what's next. And in our industry, it's an essential business. You know, the trash has to get picked up, you know, no matter what happens. So I guess the biggest challenge was just getting over that, just is not either the misinformation and the lack of information of what's going on. So just trying to follow any type of guidelines and rules, making sure our guys had hand sanitizers, extra gloves, PPEs, spending the extra money to, you know, sanitize the trucks every day after work, making sure we had enough people to fill in if people did test positive, it got sick, and things of that nature. It definitely was a challenge, especially being in a new market in Florida. Our company originated in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area. So just being able to kind of just having that new territory, right? It's just getting acclimated in that, and because we won the contract in 2019, and then top of 2020, that's when everything kind of hit the fan. So just making sure that, you know, finding out our kind of groove in that market, and then also making sure that we helping our guys and our ladies, making sure that they know that they're safe to come to work, and making sure that we're giving those incentives to come to work, you know, giving them extra bonuses, giving them that extra pay, because, you know, it's a tough business without all those other things, but you add on that extra X factor of that COVID, and it's like, oh man, what's next? Right. What do I do? Do I want to come to work? Do I feel safe coming to work, touching other people's trash? So just making sure that we are, as a company, just making sure that they know that we have their back, number one. And then number two, making sure that we are trying to educate ourselves every day to make sure that we're staying on top of how we can make things safer for ourselves, for our employees, and for our customers. Because, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, the trash has to get picked up. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to stop, you know? So I think the major challenge was definitely just, you know, just getting over that unawareness that I don't know what's next. And then once we kind of keep having those conversations, and we keep supplying those different supplies to them, and even to the point of giving them packages to take home, give them extra toilet paper, give them hand sanitizer to take home, you know, it kind of it boosts that morale of okay, my company is here for me, you know, I'm doing this, I'm risking myself, so and they make sure that we have their back. So that was a challenge, but it was also I don't want to say it's a blessing, but it also makes them know that we are not just in it for the dollars, right? We're in it for you guys. We're all in this together, you know. And that goes back to the building of the trust, the keeping that communication, and just making sure, you know, we're in this together, and we're going to make sure that we get through this together. So I think that's the major challenge as far as the pandemic. Now moving into that new industry, it was a challenge just because we have never been in that market before, in that Florida market, and it's totally different from our market in the Maryland, D.C., and the Virginia area, where in Florida it's a lot of franchise, you know what I'm saying, franchise contracts, where the actual government entity will give you this franchise, you win a contract, you have this franchise area, and that's your area, right? So you have all that residential and commercial in that area, and everybody knows what the price is, right? So it's like, okay, how do I grow outside of that? So just finding that niche, and it goes back to, you know, being relatable to your customer base, being a good service provider, and also just being able to, if somebody calls and has an issue or a problem, being able to communicate what's going on, how we could solve it and work through it together. So it's always interesting. It's always a moving pieces, but it's always fulfilling when you get over that hump and say, okay, look what we did, look what we can do, and look what we accomplished together. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And then Georgia, I know you specifically, the work that you've done, you're a huge, great collaborator, and I know Closed Loop, that's part of their core. So can you talk a little bit about that, how you collaborate well, because I know you deal with multiple stakeholders on the dairy.
Yes, definitely. The headline is really that collaboration is fundamental to achieve systems change, which is kind of how we look at the circular economy. And so at Closed Loop Partners, we have pre-competitive collaborations where we're really bringing together organizations and stakeholders from across the entire value chain. So that's from the recycling facilities to the composters to brands to environmental organizations, and getting that connectivity so that people are talking and communicating toward addressing a shared challenge. I think at our Center for the Circular Economy, what we've done are these consortiums, kind of a consortium approach. And so one example of that is our consortium to reinvent the retail bag, which we convened in 2020, and that brought together leading retailers, so Walmart, Target, and CVS Health, to address a specific shared material challenge, which is the single-use plastic bag, which we all know it's pesky, it clogs recycling facilities, it can cause environmental and economic damage. And so we brought together those three leading companies, as well as 13 other retailers, as well as those other stakeholders across the value chain, to address this shared challenge. And we ultimately kind of put a call to the globe for innovation, to solutions, sustainable solutions to the single-use plastic bag. And it was amazing. We got around 450 applicants from across the globe. And that was, scientists to college students to larger scale companies. And we ultimately narrowed it down to 9 winning solutions that were represented reusable bag systems, new materials, so more compostable materials, for example, among other things. And so then we've really shifted into piloting and testing these new models out on the ground. In the summer, we piloted some of these winning solutions in Walmart, Target, and CVS Health stores. And what's so amazing there is that you could walk from a Target, get your reusable bag, and then you could go to Walmart 2 days later and drop it off. And so I think it goes back to this, to reach scale and tipping points, we're going to need these large companies collaborating together. It's exciting for me to think of those retailers that represent hundreds of thousands of stores, to be able to connect them to innovators and kind of see this work roll out. So yes, I definitely think collaboration is a critical piece of this work.
Great. And then Terrell, what's next for you in Philly and your Instagram account?
Oh, what's next? So this summer, I'm pushing literacy, again, going back to the children. I'm just recently doing some research and talking to some people, trying to educate children about environmental justice. So I wrote it. I have it here if anybody wants to buy it. But what I'm also doing is I'm using the children's book to raise money. So $5 from every book will go towards public schools. So I'm trying to raise $1 million for the public schools. And then after that, with the Instagram, it's just continuing to try to grow the Instagram and just spread the word of how important environmental justice is, especially in, brown and black communities. So I just became a tree tender in Philadelphia, so now I get to dictate where trees are planted, we'll see which way the wind blows.
Yeah, good for you. Well, we'll watch. We'll continue watching. And then, Ryan, all eyes are on EV, right? Electric vehicles. And we had Adam Minter here. He's a columnist for Bloomberg, and he often talks about how we're all worried about 5G and the impact that will have on technology, recycling the phones. And he said, we're all worried about that, but we really should be worrying about the EVs and sort of the larger pieces. So how do you think we can keep up with the sheer volume of interest in EVs and the demand with the work you're doing?
I think the big issue is that to date, recycling has been much more of, you know, conservative burden. There's always the carrot versus the stick approach. And many government agencies up until now have really used the stick side, saying, we'll fine you if you don't recycle, we'll punish you if you don't, we'll force companies to use recycled content. But that's really because up until now, a lot of the processes used to recycle batteries were non-strategic. They were really mixing them together with other scrap metals, burn a lot of the products, make these mixtures that are then very expensive and difficult to select products out of. But by starting from the fundamentals and really doing a systematic design from the ground up, having our strategic demanufacturing and then recovering each element at a time, we're actually able to operate without charging any type of tipping fee to the owner itself. So up until recently, people who have electric vehicle batteries or even laptop or cell phone batteries in their homes, they would have to, you know, pay to have it be processed responsibly. And that put a disincentive on returning those materials back to the market. But by now having this purpose-built system where we aren't required to have them pay a fee, and based on commodity metal prices, there are even cases where we can pay them to return a battery, it goes much more to the carrot side and gives people rewards for returning these elements back to the market. And unlike hydrocarbons, which are used once and then consumed, if there's a proper system and architecture in place, these elemental metals can be used indefinitely as they're recovered and extracted and refined back to the battery grade quality and then sold right back into the domestic market. So I think really changing the paradigm about how end-of-life batteries are treated really does help us make these in much larger quantities domestically, which then brings total costs down, which then brings vehicle costs down, and really ends up helping everybody in that full closed loop system.
That's great. And then Will, tell us more about life in West Palm now compared to what you were doing in DC.
Yeah, so West Palm is definitely a bit different than the DC area. A lot more sun. Obviously, it's good. It's good. It's definitely a good thing to be in that area. It's definitely a hub for those big boys and those big companies.
Yeah.
Going back to those franchise contracts, because a lot of the small guys can't. Well, I won't say they can't, but it's not written up for them, right? So it's definitely a blessing to be in that area. I think one of the major differences is just the Those contracts where it's not as free market as it is in DC and in Maryland, where you go to a piece of hut and in the area you could kind of try to sell them your price, and your price is kind of dictated by who your government agency is, right? So that's definitely been a change of pace for us, but it's definitely a lot of opportunity there, right? It's definitely an opportunity for growth. That South Florida market is definitely a gateway in the South, so being in that quarter, it definitely gives us access to other areas in the southern parts of America, and it gives us that notoriety to be like, okay, we can handle it and we can do it, and we could be a beacon of light to other companies that may want to follow our footsteps in it. So it's definitely a blessing to be there. The workforce is a bit different. Definitely some language barriers that we had to get over, but if you in that industry, if you drive trash trucks and you be in that industry, you definitely have to have that certain mindset. So that doesn't change. You know, you have to have that mindset. I'm gonna wake up at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm gonna get to it. So that never changes. But just being in that quarter is definitely a different. You see it from a different angle. You see it from a different angle, and you learn to move in a different way, you know. And it's a change up for us because we've been in the DC area for so long, and we grew in that area so long. We are known for that area, you know. Okay. So being in that new territory, it gives us. It's almost like we're babies again, yeah. You know. I don't like to call it a boutique shop, but you know, we don't have that many trucks there. You know, but it's definitely, it gives us, again, that access to those contracts and those areas where it's like, okay, these guys can handle this type of work, and it gives us that momentum to keep growing and keep moving in that way. So I think the major difference is just how it's set up. And it's good because it protects you in a certain way. It protects you where if I have this area, you can't touch my trash, you can't touch my commercial stuff, right? Yeah. So you don't have that competition there. There are some open market things with the open top C&D containers on a roll off and the recycling containers. So you do have that competition there to kind of grow and make your own pace there. But you know, that's probably the major difference in the difference from Florida and from DC. Yeah, that's that franchise agreement versus the free market.
Sure.
It's a challenge there. That just goes back to being able to provide that quality service and being able to be safe. If they trust you, no matter if the price is the same, they're going to choose you because, hey, I trust this company. And I could call Will and I could get in touch with Will if I have an issue. And that works wonders for myself. So, yeah.
That matters. And Georgia, I know there's a lot of confusion around circularity. So can you talk a little bit about some of the common misconceptions around circularity?
Sure. Yeah, we do get lots of questions on this. I think circularity can be used, it's oftentimes used interchangeably with things like sustainability or recycling. But the fundamental difference in my mind is the circular economy is around fundamentally rethinking an economic system and how goods and materials flow through that system. And so it really is systems level. There's no single entity organization that can achieve this. It really has to be at the systems level. I think it's been interesting coming from, I'm originally from the UK and sort of in Europe, you know, circular economy is a term that is in the EU directive. And so it's a term that's a lot more familiar. But certainly since moving here, it's encouraging to see kind of circular economy language increasingly integrated and increasingly understood across the board in the US. So I think that's something I'm excited about. But yeah, I think it's that kind of holistic systems perspective that the circular economy is focusing on.
That's a great description. And Terrell, since you were on the podcast last, we talked about other people looking to you for inspiration. Have you had any luck spreading your message beyond Philly at this point? Are there other cities who are interested in doing something similar?
Yeah. Actually, since the podcast, I've talked to a few cities. I actually went to Austin, Texas to walk around with their sanitation department. And I've actually had a group in Greece. I had a group in Italy. And interesting enough, I had a group in Cairo, in Egypt, reach out. Because through my nonprofit, I want to start, the name of my nonprofit is Trash to Treasure, and I want to start Trash to Treasure chapters around the world so that people can organize their own cleanups in their own respective cities and start removing tons of trash. You know, I'm got my statistics. I'm averaging 10 tons of cleanup. That's how much I'm picking up. That's not anything to say that Philly is that dirty, but so the goal is to get everybody ignited about taking their own responsibility for what they can control and cleaning up what they can clean up, but also pinning the emphasis on, you know, elected officials, people in power, the stakeholders, to understand that, you know, it's going to take all of us to get it clean. It's just not like one part of the puzzle. Like the whole puzzle has to come together to get what we need and get everybody's city clean.
Great. And then Ryan, I know that you've had collaborations with General Motors and others. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of that in the work that you're doing?
Yes, of course. Yeah, we've been fortunate enough to have, you know, won a few corporate awards, a few government awards. So we have a few grants from the U.S. Department of Energy. You know, we have won a commercial scale demonstration project from General Motors, Ford, Stellantis, and the U.S. DOE on that one. And a separate program we are partnering with DuPont to really help scale up some of our systems. And I think a lot of it comes to is a complementary relationship where in large corporates, you may have a large amount of resources, but you also have a fair amount of bureaucracy and difficulty bringing, you know, higher risk or innovative solutions to market. And, you know, smaller and mid-sized companies have the reverse. We can take big risks, we can be nimble, we can try innovative projects, but then to actually get the scale to move forward with large-scale commercialization, it does make sense to work with these large corporates. So working with the largest companies in the world in the chemical refining sector and the automotive sector really have helped to bridge that gap and de-risk the scale up, both at the very small bench scale to pilot scale up to demonstration scale. And then also when we start building multiple entities of these commercial facilities, these are the type of technologies that large corporates want to source from. So it really does end up working for both sides there.
Oh, that's great. And then I know we've dug sort of separately into each area that you all work in, but I want to ask some general questions from all of you for the audience. What advice would you give to young professionals coming into the industry now, Will?
The advice I would give to young professionals coming out industry, just know that it's very rewarding. Number one, it's very rewarding. It's an industry that's obviously not going anywhere, so it's always going to be here for us to attack. And like I said, it's when you get into our industry and you're into it, you find people in our industry are very forthcoming with information. You'll have those that want to be close to the vest, but it's to our advantage to share that information. So you'll meet people that's willing to kind of share that information and to grow with, you know. And it's an industry where it's always changing, but it's always changing, but it's always the same. You know, the trash has to get picked up. It has to be hauled to a facility. It has to be separated, sorted, whether it's burned or taken to be processed in other ways. So you see how, if you could get into our industry and really work it, you can see how it translates to other industries and other companies and things of that nature. So I think the main thing I would tell business professionals that's coming into our industry that's interested about it is just keep your head down, listen, take all the information in as possible. Just know it's a high risk, high reward type of business. It's a place where you can really grow yourself as an individual. Yeah, I mean, it's hard work. You know, it's hard work. It's not something that you just get up and just can do. You have to love it. You have to really make love to it, really, you know. So I would say if I was talking to someone, a young person that was coming into it, I would say definitely get into it from the bottom. You know, start on the back of a truck, start there and see it, smell it, feel it, and then grow from there. It's many opportunities in it, from working on the back to driving, to being a manager, to being a supervisor. It's different avenues, and you can really see yourself grow personally in it. Because like, it's not an easy industry to get into. It's not an easy industry to stay into, and it takes hard work. You know what I'm saying? I love when I go around, I shake, you know, people in this industry hands. You know, most of them got some callus on their hands. It takes some doing to actually do it. And then those that don't really want to get down in it, they don't survive long into it, you know? Right. I have no problem with getting on the back of the truck with my guys and delivering containers and that nature, because when they see that, you know, it gives them motivation. Just be able to get, don't be scared to, you know, to get dirty, you know? So definitely a rewarding industry. It's fun, it's exciting. You know, you meet people like these young people up here and in the crowd and like Liz and stuff like that. So it's definitely rewarding, and it gives you a sense of like real work, you know? Yeah. So
that's great advice.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Georgia?
I think I do probably two bits of advice, but number one is kind of just to acknowledge that it's a really exciting time and there is a lot of momentum in the space more generally. And that comes from a multitude of factors, but you know, climate change, I think there was concerns that during COVID it would sort of be put on the back burner as a concern from a legislation perspective, among other things. But really, we actually saw a doubling down of kind of need to address this. I think, you know, disruptions across global supply chains, also renewed and kind of heightened attention on sort of the broken linear economy of a take-make waste system. And so I think there's momentum in the space. There's regulatory tailwinds, there's a bunch of other, there's a kind of a confluence of factors. Consumers are really aware, like the single-use plastic sort of ocean crisis, plastic pollution is really front of mind. And so the momentum's there, and I think the the second piece I would say is just on a more tactical level of being really persistent from a careers perspective. I was certainly really pursued wanting to get into this industry and meeting people, connecting with people, kind of being proactive. And so, yeah, persistence is key when it comes to kind of getting in and yeah, meeting those in the space.
Definitely. And persistence has served you well, Georgia. And Terrell, how about you?
For me, I get asked that question a lot because I meet a lot of people who have the infrastructure, they have the trucks, they have that, and they have no marketing.
Okay.
And I have none of those, but I have all the marketing. So if there's anybody asking me questions about PR and marketing, the first thing I always say is to be transparent. In today's world, people really recognize transparency. You know, I don't want to have to question who you are, what you do, and what you're going to do for me. The second thing is be authentic. The same Terrell you see up here is the same Terrell you're going to see at Target, is the same Terrell you're going to see at the pool. You know, I'm not a different Terrell. I'm the same person all the time. And I think that's one of the things that people are drawn to me, because no matter at where you catch me, I'm always going to be the same person. And I think the last thing for me when it comes to marketing and PR is you can't be scared. You know, there's plenty of times that I've reached out to people and be like, hey, I have this amazing thing I'm doing, and would you like to cover it on the news? And the news is like, no. And I'm like, okay. And then I still do it. And then they come back and be like, hey, we just had so many people phone in and say that you had this amazing event. And I'm like, yeah, you should have came. You know, so it's not being scared of a no, because a no is just a no. It takes one yes. I've been told no a million times, but it was that first yes that got me in the paper, that got me on Good Morning America, that got me, and then it just dominoed from there. So if anybody's thinking about, you know, social media, marketing, PR, it's really simple. You just have to have what I tell people, the riches are in the niches. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a niche, if you have something that, you know, you deem is special, that you feel like you're a master of and that no one else can, you know, duplicate or copy, then that's where you bet on. I am a charming person. I have a nice smile, and I like to clean up trash. There was nobody at the time that had all three of those things. So now I'm here, and now I'm here, and now I get to travel, and now I get to write children's book, and now I get to go co-host the Today Show, and now I get to maybe be on The View in the summer. So it's those things, but I've always stayed true to myself. I've always stayed authentic, but I've always been just brave enough to say, you know, yes to myself.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And bravery is huge. I know that's advice my dad always said. The worst they can say is no. So go for it, yeah. And how about you, Ryan? I know you bring a different perspective to it, so we'd love to hear your advice.
I think my advice would be to not be afraid to take risks, to not think that legacy structures are really locked in stone. To say you're going to do something because it's always been done that way beforehand is really not very strong logic. I think sometimes people get a bit complacent and just try to make incremental changes because things have just always been like that. And I think, especially when people are younger and they have more risks they can take, don't be afraid to turn the table over, to really start from the beginning, start from first principles, work your way up. And if you come up with a very different solution than what has been used to date, that's usually a positive sign. The fact that you really put critical thought into something and ramped it up in a logical fashion instead of just adopting what's always been done beforehand.
Fabulous advice. It's so true. And that's what you're doing with the work today. So that's awesome. Good. And then, Will, what do you think is the one thing that you wish we could change right now about the industry?
I wouldn't change much, but one thing I guess if off the top of my head, I guess just the barriers of entry.
Okay.
Making it easier for people that are interested in coming into the industry, making it easier for them to get into it. Yep. And that just comes from people that's in it, helping, you know what I'm saying, lending those helping hands. I think our company does a very good job of that. You know, they have programs for A-Days and small business things of that nature. So just making the barriers the barriers of entry easier to get into would probably be the first thing that comes to my mind. And then obviously just, you know, obviously just keep evolving those technological advances, making sure that that end process of what we're doing with the trash and the recycling, that we're doing it with a conscious thought. You know, we're doing it for the betterment of ourselves as humanity, for our planet, and things of that nature, because it starts there, you know. It starts with our waste. It starts what we consume and what we throw away. What we do with it after the fact kind of helps keep the world spinning and keeps everything a little better. So just keep on, you know, keep with the technological advances and just helping those people that want to be in the industry to help them get in the industry and be successful in it. Mm-hmm. You know, those are probably the two main things I would not say change, but, you know, make better,
sure.
I guess.
Yes. Well, we can always improve too. Mm-hmm. And how about you, Georgia? What would you like to improve?
I think like funding, it's as an industry, you know, we need more investment across mm-hmm. the board into the industry. And so I think that spans to more traditional institutional, so getting more banks to be looking at this industry and system. And so, yeah, I think funding, and then I'd echo on technological investment and kind of drawing on the point of sort of thinking outside the box too when it comes to that. And so, you know, we've seen sort of innovators looking at more modular recycling facilities yeah. that can be really local, much, much smaller scale. And so just thinking about what does that future of recycling look like, for example.
Right. Terrell?
Well, for me, I've always been a huge advocate for sanitation workers to get hazardous pay.
Okay.
So that's one that I'm really passionate about, just being a former sanitation worker
sure.
and knowing people who've been sick, poked by needles, and knowing that sanitation work is probably, I think, now the fourth most hazardous job in the world in front of cops and firefighters. So that's one thing that I think if I could push a button on and it happened tomorrow, I would definitely give uh-huh. them hazardous pay. And I think the other thing is I would change big corporations, small corporations, mom and pops, I would change their idea of what marketing could look like.
Okay.
People think that you gotta just put billboards up and mail home letters, and there's a whole side of marketing that is fun, that is integrating children, just all different types of things that I've done that I was like, guys, this is just so simple. I just had my daughter say recycle on a loop on a song and it got like 500,000 views. I was like, that was really simple. But
right.
people are so scared to, like she said, think outside the box or to do something different. It's
right.
just like there's so much fun that you can have
right.
In our industry with trash. Trash doesn't have to be smelly
right.
and droopy and long. It can be something fun, uplifting, and also that brings people together.
Right.
You know, so that's one thing I would change.
Okay. And how about you, Ryan? I feel like you've made change in a system that really had long legacy issues. So what would you say?
It did. I think I would say even just the idea of trash in the industry, the fact that really nothing is single use. You know, on an elemental basis, nothing is really consumed in the way we use things. Designing from the beginning how to use something indefinitely, not just minerals and metals, even hydrocarbon products. Different ways that if you start from the beginning with the mindset of this will be something that we have forever, and designing how to use it in that systematic fashion from the beginning, then you get away from the whole mindset that something is consumed to begin with. And you really become sustainable in a much more direct method. I mean, the traditional definition of sustainability is, you know, meeting the needs of today without compromising the ability to meet the needs of tomorrow. And really having that mindset from the beginning instead of more of an afterthought is what I would change of the industry.
Oh, I love that. It's so true. Well, I think you're all sick of hearing me talk. So anyone have questions for our esteemed panel here? Let us know. They're here to answer any. Take their advice. Be brave, people.
I'll narrow it down to two questions. So first for Ryan, I'm very interested in the topic that you seem to be an expert on, which is awesome. When I've been reading about EV batteries, I felt like one of the biggest challenges is that they're all made differently. So people are having a hard time like getting to the metals in general. So I don't know if you could just touch on that a little bit. And then this, my second question would be to Will, if you wanted to touch afterwards on employee retention, especially CDL drivers. I work in the operations department for a hauling company, and that definitely was a challenge to us throughout the pandemic, but even still, because there's such a high demand for CDL drivers.
Ryan, you want to take the first part of that?
Sure, yeah, you're right. There are many different designs out there. there's a difference between an individual battery cell and then when they're grouped together in modules and then grouped together in packs. And in reality, there really only are a handful of companies in the world that make the majority of battery cells. Very large corporations that have manufacturing capacity throughout the world. So at the cell level, there really aren't that many different types of lithium-ion batteries out there. But when companies buy individual cells, they assemble them into modules and packs in a wide variety of ways. So how you disassemble and sort a pack in a module does have a lot of variability. But then once you get down to the cell level, there's much more uniformity, which helps in that process. When we started designing our integrated demanufacturing system, we intentionally made it a universal recycling system. So we've designed for and tested on a wide variety of the form factors at the pack level, the module level, and the cell level to help get past a lot of those issues. But as we go forward, standardization at the pack level would help reduce the complexity and the cost of recycling.
And then, Will, are you okay answering that second part?
Of course. CDL retention, it's definitely a challenge across multiple industries. I think what we try to focus on, obviously money talks, right? So a lot of the times CDL drivers will leave because they think the grass is green on this other side. They think they could get paid more from a different company. So just making sure we make sure that we're paying our drivers well. One thing that we make sure that we want to do when we're entering a new market or in our current market, we want to make sure we want to be at least the top three paying companies for CDL drivers. The second thing is the equipment. You know, I tell my drivers all the time, like, this is your vehicle. You know, you're driving this vehicle, you know, 8-9 hours out the day. Treat it like your personal vehicle. And once they get in their head, like, okay, this is my personal vehicle. I want to take care of it. I want to make love to it. They fall in love with that vehicle. And again, going back to communication, you want to be able to listen to your drivers. You want to be able to make sure that whatever issues or complaints that they may have, you're addressing them not a week from their complaint or 2 weeks from the complaint, but almost immediately. You know, you want to make sure you're on top of what their issues and complaints on. But again, money talks, you know, so you want to make sure, I think that if you want to make sure you're paying your drivers well, obviously, you want to make sure you're getting them incentives for safety, being safe. You want to make sure you're getting them incentives if they're having, like, if they have a long day or if they're doing extra beyond the scope of what they're asked to do on a day-to-day basis, and you're keeping up with that, any type of extra pay, and you want to make sure that they have those benefits in place. But, you know, some drivers are going to leave. You know, some guys are just going to, they're seasonal guys, you know, so you want, but those guys that you know and trust and that you want to make sure you're communicating with them, you want to make sure you're paying them well, you want to make sure you're listening to them, and you want to make sure that their equipment is working. Because a lot of the times, if a lot of guys leave because, hey, I don't want to be here because my truck is broke down. And one thing a CDL driver tell you all day, they hate driving a truck that ain't theirs. You know, if two or three times of the week they gotta be in that spare truck that don't have AC, the packet is slow. Trust and believe, they would blow. Oh, I got a doctor's appointment, but they in the interview with another company. So you definitely want to make sure that equipment's right. You want to make sure your mechanics is on top of their jobs, and actually, you know, when something's going wrong with that truck, you want to be on top of it. So it's an equipment thing, it's a communication, it's a lot of different factors. But I think the main thing is the communication, obviously the pay, and the equipment.
Good answer. Anyone else have questions? Georgia, I have a question for you because we have a few more minutes and I'd hate to waste this time. But how does Closed Loop Partner pick the next Beyond the Bag or Bag contest that they do? How do you guys decide that?
That's a great question. And for context, before the Beyond the Bag consortium, we also have the Next Gen consortium, which is with Starbucks and McDonald's, and it's specifically focused on the fiber cup. So that's another shared material challenge across a number of brands. So it's, you know, the coffee cups, among others, and it has the polyethylene liner as well as fiber. And so, yeah, we have the cup, we have the bag. I mean, it's a great question. It's a number of different factors, so it's not an easy answer, but certainly it's kind of, there's an element of, you know, where brands are getting a lot of pressure, so from consumers, for example, as well as where, you know, there's just value creation opportunities across the material value chain for certain product categories. But yeah, there's plenty more I can think of on the horizon from both a packaging standpoint, and we did recently launch a compostable packaging consortium that focuses on kind of where is compostable packaging appropriate, where does it make sense. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not a silver bullet solution. I think across the board we recognize that around packaging generally. Every type and format of packaging has a whole bunch of trade-offs, and so it really comes down to different, you know, where does reusable make sense, where does recyclable make sense, where does compostable make sense, is it when compostables touch it, is it food contact packaging, so you're kind of getting some of the value of the scrap food in there. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of different factors that we kind of evaluate and when we're sort of determining those kind of projects.
Gotcha. And then Terrell, I'm sure it would help the audience, do you have one or two marketing tips you could give for people in the industry that they could walk away with?
Sure. Despite popular belief, people want to see trash. Uh-huh. Because there is something golden about the before and after. I learned really quickly when I was building my brand that when I would post a pile and then the next day post the same area with the pile gone, those are my greatest performing posts on Instagram because people want to see a before and after. So a lot of people are scared to post the ugly side. And I'm sure. Like, my best performing post on Instagram is when I dumped a can in the back of a truck and there was a family of possums in the can. Yeah. And that has like over 30,000 views on my Instagram because people were like, pick it up with your hand. I'm like, I'm not animal control, you know? But it's just, it creates a conversation. That's the one thing about my brand is that it creates conversation. It gets people engaged.
Right.
So that would be the other part of my marketing tip is find ways that your audience wants to be engaged. My audience are all tree huggers, come out and clean up every Saturday, bring their children. So when I host events, if I did something around shoelaces, I'm not going to have anybody come out, you know? So speak directly to your audience when it comes to marketing, because you'll notice that it'll just start coming to you. Like, I really don't reach out to anybody anymore, but I have like 300 emails that I'm not answering this week, all with people trying to hire me to organize for them. So just create, in real estate, they create markets. I created a marketing market for trash.
Right, oh, that's great. And then Ryan, when is your facility opening?
Like I was saying, we have our first commercial plant under construction right now. In the next few months, the physical building will be completed.
Awesome.
And then throughout the rest of this year, we'll be installing and commissioning our equipment. So we have this recycling facility in Northern Nevada, just outside of Reno in a town called Fernley. And then separate from recycling, we also, you know, manufacture lithium products directly from resources here in Nevada. So up near Tonopah, kind of between Las Vegas and Reno, we're building a multi-ton per day demonstration scale facility that makes, you know, battery grade lithium directly from raw resources right here in the US.
Amazing. Well,
Liz.
I sent a tour.
Oh. Tyrell, I wanted to give you a shout out on my flight here. I actually had a copy of Entrepreneur magazine and you were featured in it. I don't know.
Huh?
I don't know if you even knew that, but I have it back at my hotel, so I can give it to you.
I did it.
But I actually have a question for Ryan. The question is, I think it's amazing that you're doing EV recycling specifically for batteries, but I was wondering, and I know this is a more complex question, but is there an opportunity to convert existing internal combustion vehicles to be EV so we don't need to create new vehicles? I'm not as subject expert within the space, but I agree waste is a design flaw and why create something new if we have a ton of vehicles already on the road.
There definitely is an opportunity for retrofits like that. It really does work in the short term because of the quantity of vehicles made every year and a large amount of electric vehicle capacities under construction. The majority will likely come from new vehicles. But where it actually works especially way is much more of commercial vehicles and class 9 trucks, you know, including, you know, trash vehicles, where a lot of them were designed with, you know, diesel combustion engines that are being retrofitted with hybrid electric powertrains, because those have such a high capacity factor, how often they're used throughout a year, you can get a payback from that conversion relatively quickly. So there are a lot of existing companies out there that will do, you know, aftermarket conversions to fully electric vehicles for a lot of these service trucks out there.
Thanks for the question. Anyone else before we wrap?
Sometimes I feel like this industry is not the most welcoming to small businesses, whether it's regulations in place like franchise agreements or capital funding or just the way people look at waste and they see it as big trash haulers or whatever. And I'm wondering if there are young people trying to enter this realm, how can they do that with maybe not going the typical way of like a big business or a big corporation, but they went in, maybe want to create their own? Do you have advice for them?
Who are you asking?
That's for me?
Okay. Will, you want to give that a shot to start? Because I know that you've experienced this, even though you came from a bigger organization.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question. Like I said, that's in our industry, that's typically what you'll see. You'll see that our various entry into our industry. So my thought process and my advice would be, obviously, to start, if anybody that's young and trying to get into it, or if you're not so young trying to get into it, I think you just want to get in ground level. You kind of want to try to put yourself in a position where you're talking to people who has done it for a while, and you kind of want to see where to go from there. Because a lot of the opportunity for new companies come from subcontracting, you know, because of those franchise agreements, because of the high cost to get into the industry. You know, it's not cheap to buy a garbage truck, you know. So it's definitely just one, if you're very serious about it, you're going to have to start from ground level. You know, if you're not, if blesses myself to be a second generation, or if you don't have an uncle or an aunt or some cousins into it, then you're definitely just going to have to just kind of putting yourself in rooms like this. You're going to have to do your research, you're going to do your homework, and you're going to have to, like I said, don't be afraid to get your hands dirty. You're almost going to have to wear multiple hats. You're going to have to be on the back of the truck to drive the truck, to do your finances all on your own, you know, and it's not going to be easy. And until we kind of find that way to make it easier for and it's really just finding those governments that's giving out those benefits to small businesses and stuff like that, put yourself in that room to kind of get those contracts, get those subcontracts in that nature. You're right, it's not easy. And I don't see it changing immediately, but there are things in place to help those people get into that industry. A prime example, in our West Palm contract, they did a diversity study to say, okay, why aren't any other small businesses able to do this franchise agreement, you know? And they had that set aside for that area, that it had to be a minority or a small business that was awarded that contract. So it's doing research, it's putting yourself in that position, it's networking. Our industry is a high networking space. So, you know, you just have to do your homework, do your research, and not be afraid to kind of get your hands dirty and really work, you know? So.
Can I add to it?
Sure.
I'll just add, I kind of did mine backwards. So I created my brand first. So Your Fave Trash Man, like, I didn't even know I was in that magazine, but Your Fave Trash Man is out there. And what I did was I used my trust and community, and I started a hauling company. So I haul construction and demo, but I'm in that gray area of community. So I don't have large contracts, but what I have is I have that grandmama on the block that got her basement cleaned out, and she can't afford to hire Waste Management or Republic to come and get her 3 or 4 tons. So that's where I made my impact, is that in Philly, I'll come get your 10, 12, 15 bags at an at-cost rate, where you're not paying the $120 a ton. I'm charging you $75, and I'm actually losing money, but in the long run, I'll make money because I have relationships with the dump where, you know, everybody in Philly is dumping at $120 a ton, but I'm dumping at $50 because of the brand, because people just want to be associated with the brand. So if there's somebody young coming in and they necessarily don't have the advantages of like Will being a second generation, or the smarts like Ryan to be breaking down EV batteries, or being from the UK with an amazing accent, and just people think you're awesome no matter what, and they're just like a normal guy who was on the back of the truck. I created my brand and had community trust me first, because one thing I realized is that community didn't trust our elected officials, they didn't trust our streets department, but they did trust a transparent, authentic guy that when he said he was going to be there at 10, he really got there at 9:45.
That's great advice. And Georgia, do you have anything to add from a women's perspective? And I know we talked a little bit about
startups, how they can look for capital, but is there any advice you have for a young entrepreneur who would want to get into this like her?
I think, yeah, I thought on the kind of, I would use reusable packaging ecosystem maybe as a parallel, where I think there's a whole plethora of kind of small scale startups in that space, and they've really created community among themselves. I think it goes back to a point that you made where generally speaking, people are open and collaborative. It's kind of space, especially in the reusable packaging sphere, there's space for everyone because we need more of it. And so I think they're a group that's interesting to look at, of just a really like connected community of startups that are kind of parallel to one another, but are sharing insights and actually partnering. So for example, one of our pilots, there was two reuse collaborators that partnered together, both small companies, to optimize their products over. So one was providing a technology and one was providing the product. And so it's kind of like collaboration and more. So I think, yeah, finding the right communities. I think it's similar on the female side of just finding communities where you can talk with people in the industry, get advice, and share feedback and so forth is really helpful.
And I think you'll all attest, don't lose faith, because this industry started as a small business. So I think everyone's aspiring to do more. So stick with it, find your people, and build your own community, I think would be great. Thank you all so much, and thank you to this amazing panel. They rock. You can see how it would be hard to choose who the 42 people are. Thank you for listening. It would mean the world if you would take a moment to rate or review this podcast. And if you share it with us on one of our social networks, we are giving out some fun, nothing wasted podcast swag. So just tag us and see what you get. Thanks so much. Yeah.